The following audio may contain coarse language and other material that may not be suitable for a younger audience. Viewer discretion is advised. Also, we may spoil anything and everything, so you have been warned.
I'm Sarah Becker.
I'm Trevor Flynn.
And I'm Jack Newman, and welcome to Muscle Relaxants, the sequel. No, I'm just kidding. Hello and welcome to the Movie Gang Podcast. This week we're going to be reviewing the James Bond turned blaxploitation film Live and Let Die, starring the first of the Roger Moore movies. I always forget this is the first Roger Moore movie. If you guys can't tell, I am in extreme back pain, and so I'm going to be taking a muscle relaxant while we record this tonight. And so you get what you came for. How are you guys doing this week? You guys excited to talk about this racially charged work of Bond fiction?
You know, oh boy. I had really, like, we definitely needed a break from Bond.
Oh yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay, cool, we'll get back into Bond, this will be great. And then it's this film, and I was just like, why did we come back to Bond?
Yeah, it's I really have blinders on. All I remember from the Roger Moore era is like being funny on the moon and Moonraker, and then like Under the Sea and The Spy Who Loved Me. And then I'm like, oh yeah,
there's rampant that one with Baron Sandy.
Holy shit, he's going to New York. And it's like, it's a different country because British people don't understand New York. Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Trevor.
Oh, I'm just, you know, scouring through Wikipedia, and there's a thing where the screenwriter thought it would be daring to use black people as villains for some reason. because the Black Panthers were a thing, he was like, it would be daring to have black people as villains.
Why is that daring?
Is that a British thing or just general? I don't know.
I don't know, dude. I'm not going to judge what the thought process and some of this was. But I got a summary here for you. When Bond, Roger Moore, investigates the murder of three fellow agents, he finds himself a target invading vicious assassins as he closes in on powerful Kananga. Yeah. Known as the streets as Mr. Big, Kananga is coordinating a global threat using tons of self-produced heroin. As Bond tries to unravel the mastermind's plan, he meets Solitaire, Jane Seymour, a beautiful tarot card reader whose magic is crucial to the crime lord. Wow.
They didn't even try on that one.
And that was another thing where they're like, it will be daring to have black villains. They also had to make him a drug lord. Like, was that...
Apparently they hadn't watched all of fucking, you know, U.S. cinema history. So the director's, this is again, is a Guy Hamilton one. Feature song is the amazing Sir Paul McCartney's Live and Let Die. Famously, apparently, during this course of this movie, he sent the first cut of Live and Let Die, or he sent the final cut of Live and Let Die to the director, Guy Hamilton. And he said, oh, that sounds good. It sounds good for a demo. When's the real thing going to be done? So apparently that is. And of course, I think the Live and Let Die, the song, is like the most memorable thing to come out of this movie.
Slaps a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you look at like top 10 Bond songs, like this is up there.
And I know the song, obviously. I know the song Live and Let Die, you know, as a, you know, Paul McCartney Wings song. I actually didn't realize that it came from being the opening number for this film. I didn't know it was a Bond song. I don't think I had seen this movie before. Maybe once, a very long time ago. So that was cool. I was like,
yeah, I remember finding that out in like, sorry, I think there's a delay. I think
there's a pretty bad delay. Yeah. Let's pause a second here. Sarah, are you okay? I think your internet
conked
out on us. Don't hit pause, leave it rolling. Trevor, are you still rolling?
Yeah, I'm good. I was just gonna say, I remember finding that out too in like middle school when I was watching the Bond movies with a friend, and every time I heard the song after that, all I could think of were sharks.
Yeah, let's just keep rolling. Sarah, can you hear us?
Yes. Your videos are frozen, crap, but I can hear y'all okay.
Let's all turn off all our video feeds and see if that helps the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a notification come up saying, like, your internet connection is unstable. So
woof.
That was related, I'm sure. But
Jack, you started the call, right? So we're using your connection.
Yeah, it is. It is on Sarah's end. I mean, you and me are not having trouble. Sorry, Sarah. I think it's like unstable internet stuff.
No, I mean, I am, you know, on the same server as an entire apartment complex. So it was bound to happen eventually.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Did you get through all the summary, Jack? Was that pretty much all we need to know?
Or? That's all we need to know. I mean, what the fuck else do you need to know about this movie? I think it's a little light to call Kananga a quote unquote mastermind, but you know.
Yes, I will get all of the country addicted to heroin and then I'll be a monopoly because there will be so much demand that the other heroin suppliers will go out of business. Did that make sense to anybody else? I didn't follow
that. Yeah, I don't think he's like understands, or at least the screenwriter didn't understand how heroin works. Like,
or, you know, economics.
It's like how it's kind of creating a need is just going to it's not going to put everybody else out of business. Also, like, you know, I don't want to like sell myself short on like knowing things about the drug trade. I watched The Wire, you know, that's the whole thing. I think the screenwriters just needed to watch The Wire for like one season and they'd have been fine. But the point
I don't think
is
they
like,
could have done a blaxploitation movie if they'd ever watched The Wire, though. Aren't those two things kind of at odds? I don't know.
Yeah,
apparently that's another theme. I read that was another theme of blaxploitation movies is the drug trade was always like part of it, I guess.
Yeah. And not always like the bad guys, too. It's blaxploitation is like a weird set of cinema stuff. And I am by no means an expert on it. I have a couple of particular favorites, but all of my favorite blaxploitation stuff is generally outliers like Black Dynamite and stuff that's generally poking fun at the genre.
Like decades later, looking back. Right. Yeah,
exactly.
This is my first true blaxploitation film as well.
I think it is, and I think a lot of people define this as a blaxploitation film. Like, it's in New York City, like all the villains are black, and he's doing chases through the swamps of Louisiana, and Baron Samedi is the villain.
They got afros, they like put on afros, they got voodoo, they got New Orleans jazz funerals, which was one of my favorite parts. I don't know
I
how
did enjoy
was,
the jazz funerals very much, actually.
That was a cool opening. I did like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the other thing too is like I think everything about this, like I think it's a very I think it's a very cool film in and of itself. I think that the beginnings of what is going to become the Moore era are here. Obviously, the thing that, you know, the Louisiana J.W. Pepper is here, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Ask us what our first impressions of Roger Moore are, Jack, because this is Sarah's
first time. Yeah, this is where we
got
to talk about. Yeah. Well, I hate to buttonhole Roger Moore into this movie because he becomes something else. He becomes a chiller Bond. The fact that this movie is rough is not necessarily his fault, but what did you think of him in this?
Yeah, I actually really liked the way he portrayed the character, and it is not the actor's fault that he was put into such an unfortunate script
for his
first time out of the shoot.
Yeah, he agrees I don't know why I'm arguing here. I think like it depends. Like, you know, it's like I'm just backing off because like Scarlett Johansson is responsible for, you know, Ghost of the Shell. You know what I mean? Like,
fair.
I do think actors bear some responsibility for the choices and roles they pick. And this is, you know, this was a blaxploitation film, and it was
Bond. Even back in the like whenever Charade was made, who was it? Gregory Peck in that, or am I thinking of somebody else? Was like, she's a little young for me. I don't know if I like this. Which like. You know, even back then, where it's like my first impression of Roger Moore is he's so old.
Like, yeah, he's the
you already
Bond.
Told me that he's like, yeah, the longest, like the most prolific Bond. And they're like do an old man run by the end of his run, you know, not to be ageist, I guess. But like you can tell that he's like geriatric doing these action scenes, I guess.
Yeah, he's got a hip out. Like he had a hip out in View to a Kill, I think.
But this is his first film and he's 46. I did the math on this. He's 46 in this. This is his first film. We last saw Connery in Diamonds. He was 41. It was 32 when he started in Dr. No. And this is Roger Moore starting.
Can I be honest? The funny thing to me is that Roger Moore seems younger in this than Connery does in Diamonds, and I don't know why.
No, wow. I absolutely agree. He looks good.
Yeah, Connery just started looking bad at the end of Diamonds, and he looks. Wait till we get to the Thunderball remake. Connery looks appallingly bad.
There's a Thunderball remake.
Whoa, we're not watching a Thunderball remake. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we are, guys. I'm sorry. I disagree with Ben about this one. I think it's important.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What do you mean?
No, it's Never Say Never. No, Never Say Never Again. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, so it's not literally a Thunderball remake.
Yeah,
no, it is. A Thunderball remake. No. It is literally a different studio came and made a James Bond remake of Thunderball, calling it something else, starring Sean Connery.
But it's using the same source material script,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, he's James Bond.
But why is it Thunderball? Is it are parts of it underwater? Is it the same story?
Look, it's the exact same story. A nuclear warhead goes missing in the Bahamas.
Oh, I didn't know this. Of course we got to do it. Yeah, I got you. No, yeah, I know you're
talking about. An aging James Bond makes an uncharacteristic.
An aging James Bond.
Yeah. He is old man Connery in that.
Yeah, he's super old, and his love interest is too young for him. It's really bad.
It's still gross in this one, especially when it's the tarot card reader's first time having sex, and it's like they talk about it, and it's the whole thing where she loses her.
It's funny to me that I just feel super uncomfortable with any references to female virginity in movies now. Just not uncomfortable, but uncomfortable that it's used, especially in a Bond film where you're like, there's no way.
Well, in a story that was probably written by a man. Yeah,
you're like, oh, because it's pure, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, it's she loses her purity powers to read the cards in this tarot religion that was made for this movie. It's probably not based on anything. I don't know. I could be wrong, but you guys remember, does anybody else remember going into Trinity freshman year? We were supposed to read this thing about actual Haitian voodoo and how it's not like Hollywood voodoo. Does anybody else remember? Did anybody else read that?
I did, yeah.
I remember it being a thing and I probably read it, but I honestly don't remember a thing about it.
I can almost promise you guys, I did not read it.
All I remember is that it's not what you think it is in Hollywood, which is, not surprising by any means, but.
Voodoo, I don't remember reading that. I've read a lot about voodoo because, ironically, I will say, I have learned more in the past 3 years of doing Dungeons & Dragons campaigns.
D&D, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I was looking up, it's really cool. There's a lot of obscure, Native American folklore monsters that are a lot of cool, like the Wendigo and stuff that you can pick. And so I was looking into voodoo and I was like, man, voodoo is too much for me, man. No, but it's actually a really cool, it's not so much of a fixed religion as it is a series of kind of superstitions and beliefs that have kind of codified in certain places. And it's actually a really, really, really fascinating subject to me. But again, I just want to stay for the record. I'm not by any stretch an expert of it, nor do I want to talk about it so much. There is very little in the way of reality that was done. I guess the thing that shocks me is it's such a fascinating subject. Just the lack of research put into this movie sort of shocks me. Does that make sense to you guys? I don't know. I did more research in a campaign that no one listened. No offense. But I did more research doing a campaign for Dungeons and Dragons that I feel like the movie makers did about the subject matter of this movie.
Well, I mean, this is the same core of people that went to Japan and didn't understand why there weren't castles on the ocean, which, it's much easier for us to do research now with the internet, but it's
that's fair. That's fair. It's also you look back and it's I'm sure there was some stressed out the world is run. My favorite thing is the world is run by a bunch of stressed out interns that are they had to get shit done in the time period. And they're go to Japan. It's just use the big castle that's downtown. That's easy for us to get to. I actually saw a defense online as to why they did that with the ninja school at the castle. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. Because it was what they could get to. They could get production out there.
Oh, yeah. I'm just talking about how they they were looking for him on the ocean and they didn't find him because they didn't know, because they didn't check beforehand.
Yeah, the lack of research done for this movie is shocking, but it doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't shock me at all.
If that makes sense.
It's not interested in realism or anything. Not that it should be. I mean, there's probably no context in which you can make this movie and it be not offensive.
Yeah.
So
I do want to point out the budget for this movie is $7 million.
What is that back then?
I'm adjusting, but like, it's more than you're thinking. But 1973.
I don't know, man. Those boat chases go on for a while. There's lots true. Of explosions, and yeah, I can.
Yeah,
see
yeah, yeah. 6.2%. Oh, kind of. Just give me the inflation calculator, Jesus. Oh, seven. How many zeros on 7 million? Man, I am getting
six.
Thank you.
Welcome.
end year, so start 1920 calculation. Jesus. Price difference converted amount would be $40 million. Yeah, that's still dirt cheap for a movie.
Yeah, it's
guys.
A small movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just want to point, I thought 7 million was very little for this movie as well. This is a blaxploitation movie. It's like, I guess, like, they just took, and I want to compare that to like the Bond before this. I think Diamonds Are Forever. I'm just checking, guys. Sorry. I should have probably done this research before we fucking started.
I mean, I honestly don't have very much to say about this movie, so by all means, stall away.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I just vamp. No, I'm just kidding. okay, yeah, Diamonds was $7.2 million, so I guess I'm just totally wrong about this. And
what are you trying to say with how cheap it is anyway?
I thought that there was a movement to blaxploitation because it might have been a cheaper genre to do, but it doesn't appear that. Also, this movie only did slightly less than the previous. Like, these two are actually very much in line with each other. Huh. You know what I mean? So weird. I guess I don't understand the decision making process that was happening at this time period. Like, we like to think of Diamonds Is Forever as this horrible movie, but it really wasn't. They really wanted Sean Connery back. They didn't want to do the franchise without him. And by extension, like, they just, you know, it's funny to me that, like, how bad a Bond film does or doesn't do. It's like, really, OHMSS, which is generally a lot of people's favorite Bond movie, really didn't do all that good. And it's just like, look, Ben's favorite
Bond movie. and a lot of the community that cares.
I might say that in fairness to Ben, like, I don't want to put him in a box. I'll put myself in the box. It's the film nerd's favorite Bond movie. Sure, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm not trying to put.
I was watching
in a box.
An anime the other day that had like a snow scene. I can't remember what it was.
I know exactly what the fuck
but
you're talking
I was
about.
Just
what
like,
was it?
The Bond theme came on. It was almost the Bond theme with a few different notes different. And I was like, is this? Wow. My Majesty's Secret Service. If I'm not just imagining this and the music isn't just like a coincidence, but it was pretty close. And I'm thinking that's definitely what they're referencing right now. Like, they're not even skiing. They're just on a mountain with snow. And it's, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting enough, I was looking at the Bond prices. Actually, Thunderball was $9 million and Honor Majesty's Secret Service was $7 million. So it seems that all these Bond movies after Thunderball are $7 million. Even kind of like going out of the 60s into the 70s, they were $7 million. OHMSS did $82 million, though. And so it was probably about a $40 million drop from Diamonds and this. So it was a significant failure, I think, or at least it didn't fail the series, but definitely
box office or the budget. I'm confused.
Box office. So that's it was about $87 million for the box office. Still very much a success since they spent $7 million on these. Man, what I'm realizing is that the margins on James Bond movies at these times were thick as shit.
I guess that's why they keep making them.
Well, I think that's exactly it. I think that's the plan. It's like, we're going to make some cheap crap. Sorry, I don't mean to paint it as cheap crap. we're gonna make some genre movies. Sorry,
went and found a tarot card deck of all lovers cards for this. Okay, they had to buy like 50 tarot card decks so they could have a tarot card of just the lovers card. So,
oh my God.
So they could get laid. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's actually kind of funny to me. I actually agree with that entirely. That's really funny.
I mean, they do show him going into a tarot card shop, so it doesn't come out of nowhere.
Like, Ross Kananga, as credited as a stunt coordinator, was the owner of the alligator and crocodile farm in which Bond escapes from some hunger. So Kananga did this stunt by himself wearing Roger Moore's clothes. So the guy, there's actually the guy's name.
I was wondering about that. Because
was the stunt coordinator. Yeah.
So they named it after him.
Yeah, cool. Well, you have to realize they just found a dude in fucking Florida that would run across alligators and they filmed it. Like, that's Yeah. I mean, man, that's one
of the most Florida things I've ever heard. I did wonder
if those were real alligators or crocodiles that he ran across.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Guess not like not in the first shot, right? Yeah. But yeah. Like
no,
at some
is.
Point, right?
They yeah. are. They're real crocodiles. And get this. It took 5 attempts to complete the hunt.
5?
During the 4th, one of the crocodiles snapped at one of the shoes as it went by. The producers, while scouting locations, first took notice of Mr. Kananga's farm from the sign out front. Warning, trespassers will be eaten. The sign can be seen in the film. They liked Ross Kananga so much they used his surname as the film's villain, Dr. Kananga.
Wow. Is this just all IMDb trivia? This is fascinating. I love that. They're like, let's film a movie here.
I don't want to say like that's totally like I'll go somewhere. There's a lot of stuff.
It's clearly the Bond approach, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like God forbid they go to Myrtle Beach someday. So right? It's going to be James Bond in medieval times. It's going to be great. I don't know.
Or, you know, yoga tigers.
Oh, yeah, fuck. I can't believe that's there.
Wait, what are yoga tigers again? Is this more Tiger King thing that I've
read? Yeah, there's that one guy from Myrtle Beach yoga guru or whatever.
I've been to his thing. I went there when I was young. I told you guys this. It was not.
Yeah, but why a yoga tiger? I don't understand what.
Because he's a yogi. Myrtle Beach.
he's a yogi. Like he's a yogi and he has tigers.
Okay. I was picturing either tigers doing yoga or people like who are dressed up as tigers doing yoga.
I mean,
or
with
something.
James Bond, who fucking knows? I mean,
well, yeah, exactly.
Ironically, somehow both of those things are true.
Yeah. The word pimpmobile gets used in this movie. I had a car in high school that all my friends called a pimpmobile because it was an Oldsmobile.
Oh my god, that
I
thing.
Missed that car.
Yeah.
God, I love how
did
like
you have
we
to get rid of that car finally.
Oh yeah, it's crushed in a junkyard somewhere.
Oh.
It ate shit. I will say I did love riding to Lulu's in that car and like feeling like I could fucking see you from like a state between us. Like there's like a full state like in between us in that car. We would cruise places. So I was like, I didn't have to even like be in your own like personal space. It was amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Also, there's an espresso machine in the beginning. That's something.
Yes.
I love that espresso machine. That's like one of the most gadgety things.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah. We actually have one that Megan's parents bought us. So she was looking at that and being like, I don't think he's doing that right. That doesn't look very good. Like, I think he puts the coffee, I guess he pours milk into the coffee and then puts it in the milk steamer or whatever. I don't know. It's from the 70s. Who knows? What else? What else do I have on my espresso machine, pimpmobile, black people love dancing no matter what the context is. Rosie works for the CIA but can't operate a gun. We share the same hairbrush. I don't know what that line was about between Carl Jr. and Bond. I have no idea what that meant. Y'all aren't gonna help me with that one? Okay, that's fine.
Favorite thing. So there's a couple of, sorry, I got a lot of IMDb stuff here. So like the Bond apartment is shown for the second time in the franchise. The setting is not used again until Spectre 2015. Among the fixtures is a machine for making coffee that is treated as a gadget. Today's audience will recognize it as an espresso machine, mm-hmm. La Pavoni to be exact.
Yeah. Yep. I read that. I saw that one.
Yeah. Actually, Baron Samedi and Damballa are named after two powerful Loa spirits in the voodoo religion. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. The producers were reportedly required to pay protection money to the local Harlem gang to ensure the crew's safety. When the cash ran out, they were encouraged to leave.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That is reportedly. Okay. I'm not super sure. IMDb is usually pretty good about like chasing some of this crap down. I just think that this is this is not the best introduction to Roger Moore. And
no.
I think that this is still a holdover. And I think one of the things that I'm amazed by, I think has changed in this film for good or worse, is that Roger Moore kind of has this vibe to him that he's looking at the world around him and he's like silently, like in a very British way, judging it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which so, I didn't like.
Yeah. I guess it's better than like, you know, like then Sean Connery's like, I'm a man. I take what I want.
I'll give you that. There's more. Yeah, there's yeah. slightly more character there. I'll give exactly. you that.
It's subtle. It's more subtle. And it's also like, you know, I think it allows them to get away with characters a little bit. Well, today they don't get away with it.
I don't think they're getting away with anything here. But yeah, when they shut him up at some point and just like whack him over the head as he's about to make a quip, I laughed because it's like, just shut up, Bond. Just, you don't have to say anything. Just stop with the quips, because he's just... Yeah.
Because then that's Moore's era, is like, it's just quip. Like, yeah. like he can't deliver dialogue, just like
till death
off.
Do us part or thereabouts. That needs to be on a wall somewhere. That's definitely one of my favorite Bond quotes. Yeah.
Sheriff, I will say, I think that's the thing, is like, and it's the question is like, does this movie understand or have the wherewithal to stand back and give it like judgment? Because like, you know, this movie has Sheriff J.W. Pepper, and clearly Bond has no respect for him, and like he is a punching bag in the context of the film. But he's still like a racist stereotype, and somehow he's still not okay. You know what I mean? Even at the fact that Bond has no respect for him. It's like,
yeah, I actually recognize him from Man with the Golden Gun. This is the first time I'd seen him in his introductory role. He comes back in the next movie, Sarah. Just be prepared for that. Yes. I think he's more, I don't know that he's on vacation. So I don't think he like shakes down any black people because they're black in that one. So he's probably a lot more palatable in the next one as just a idiot American tourist kind of. Mm-hmm. So. I don't know. I have fond memories of seeing that J.W. Pepper. This one, not so much. I mean, he is still a stereotype one way or another. He's like a redneck stereotype, I guess, too, right? So that's whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. Man. I'm just realizing I've already gotten through my entire list. I don't have anything else.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to cut this one thing. I do want to go ahead and talk about what we're going to score this guy, because I am very curious about where
we
all sit.
I haven't made up my mind if this is better or worse than Dr. No. It's kind of feels, it has a similar feel to Dr. No for me, where there's the like the Caribbean. I mean, it literally, they go, there's the island culture shit, and they, you know,
there's
doing
Quarrel
that.
Sun.
And Quarrel, throwback to Quarrel, yes. Yep. Black sidekicks abound. And what is the deal with the guy with the face? Because when the first time you see him, you're like, what's wrong with his face? And then later, he takes it off. He's like, aha, see? We were different people. It's like, yeah, that first guy was really suspicious. You're like, you're really drawing attention to yourself with that face that doesn't look like your... I don't know. That was just really funny to me.
Yeah, my take on this is a 5, and I'll say that because it's like it's kind of a nothing burger. Moore is about to rise quickly here in my ranks, because I think what's next after this? I think it's sorry guys,
it's Golden Gun, dude.
Yeah, so like I said, like I think one.
I can't wait
best,
for Golden Gun. We're gonna get Christopher Lee, which, you know, is gonna outshine Roger Moore, and it's
gonna
be great.
And it's exactly right, because Roger Moore is just the subtext there is that Christopher Lee doing a better Sean Connery than Sean Connery ever did versus Roger Moore. Like that's like the subtextual fun of Golden Gun that I think I've always enjoyed, is that like if you watch these eras back to back, and this is one of the first times we've done that, and I think also there's so many things that are referenced in pop culture and Golden Gun that it's such fertile ground, like the death defying island in Maze Room, and like the Hall of Mirrors bit with guns. Ugh, that's they did that. Actually, I guess they didn't do it technically. I think Enter the Dragon did that, maybe, if I'm not mistaken. I need to find that Hall of Mirrors trope. I'll look it up later. Sarah, what do you give this?
I give it a 4 for pretty much the same reasons you gave it a 5. I don't know why my 4 is the same as your 5.
We're all very just, like, eh, you know what meh. I mean? Yeah.
I liked how, let me rephrase something I said earlier. I thought Roger Moore was a good actor in this film, despite the fact that the film is super problematic.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
I think problematic is being really nice.
I know. Too. I know it is.
Yeah.
But I do look forward to seeing better Roger Moore Bond films because I know they're out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, I hope they're out there. So I really do like, is Moonraker the one with Jaws and they're in space?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I and remember also, loving that one so much as a kid.
And that's where we're going. We're going to get, he's going to get a little bit more serious with Golden Gun. And then we're going to get The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker, which are just cheese back to back. And also in my opinion, cheese that doesn't there's no secondary questionability cheese in there. I mean, yeah, it's still Bond, but it's more I don't know. It's that more he's just throwing shade at the situation. He's like, I'm probably going to bang this girl, but I'm not going to say it out loud because I'm a gentleman. And so I'll just let you imagine that I am what I'm going to do. Yes. And I don't know, but it's better. It's he has a certain Bond shadeness that makes everything much more okay in my book. So it's going to be interesting. Yeah. So before we get to Trevor's score, I did want to point out something real fast, and that the Hall of Mirrors trope is technically goes back to the novel The Phantom of the Opera in 1911. I think it has to have been a trope of stuff before that, but the earliest is actually in John Bootman's 1974 movie Zardoz. Character
John Borman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's Sean Connery as character Z battles against the vortex in a mirror maze. Yeah, and then one of the most famous ending sequences in film history related to the House of Mirrors and the Enter the Dragon. So definitely Enter the Dragon and Bruce Lee is, where this starts. And then Scaramanga and the Man with the Golden Gun is the one immediately after Enter the Dragon. So that becomes, a thing.
Wait,
with the next
so two. Scaramanga does come back in the next movie. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, Scaramanga is...
Because he's there on the train at the end laughing. He does
Scaramanga. Scaramanga is played by... Is the guy played by... I'm thinking of Samdi. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Samdi's end credit bit is really weird, by the way, because he's almost a villain at that point. He's I'm actually magical. And I'm don't do that, Bond.
Well, yeah. I mean, they go down under the grave to where you see the science behind it all, that he's being resurrected or whatever. But at the same time, you also see the first guy that Bond shoots his head off, his eyes look up at where his head got shot off, and it's this weird plastic model thing. And then that just disappears and another one comes up. So they don't show us a bunch of Baron Samdis down there. So it is science, but it's also magic. It's both, I guess. I don't know. It's whatever.
Well, I think the clearest thing here is that they have no idea what it is.
Oh, yeah.
No,
it's not clear.
It's
mystery.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing that's about to characterize Roger Moore is that, only in the loosest possible senses can you call the Roger Moore errors a mysteries. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's more and we're from event A to event B, and Bond is good at chiropractory, and that's why he managed to solve this mystery. None of it becomes follow along mystery, and I think that's one of the things too. It's earlier Bonds, as dense as they can be, had technical mysteries that you could solve with clues and stuff, and maybe not great, but they were there. Mm-hmm. That's gone in the Moore era. Trevor, what's your score?
4. I'll give it a 4 too.
All right, I think that's going to pull us to a 4.5, but don't let me do math because I have a muscle relaxant on board.
13 divided by 3.
Oh, stop it. You're not faster than my calculator.
Don't let me do math. It comes out to 4.3, so yeah, it rounds up to a
4.5. 4.5, yeah, okay. I was right. Okay, well, I was right. That's what happened. Okay.
Oh my god, that was the Wendigo sound from our Dungeons and Dragons.
Wendigo, not Windy. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Ed ruined, Ed did that in the cast too, and he, I was, trying to build, suspense and shit, and I was, and he just said Wendigo, and you all chuckled, and I was, fuck. Just, never underestimate your player's ability to take all the suspense out of a situation by, I don't know. Anyways, yeah. So I think we're just going to give it a 4.5. And yeah, I'm a little bit bored by this one. I'm ready to get to like good Roger Moore. But we had to get to this one to get to that. Next week, we're going to get Scare Manga and Christopher Lee with Man with the Golden Gun, a seminal Bond film. And I think actually this next one is where the entire franchise is going to begin to change. I think this is, well, actually, I think it's changing here, but this was not for the better. And I still think it's essentially, I think it changed here, but they did essentially a Black Point film, and so it's hard to look back on this thing very characteristically and interestingly. But yeah,
alrighty then.
Yeah, for the Movie Gang Podcast, this has been Sarah Flynn,
Sarah Becker. You take it. Say bye.
Okay. Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Trevor Flynn. Thank you very much.
Oh, no. You're Trevor Becker. That's what it is. Yeah. I'm gonna go to bed now. Bye.
Are we done? Okay.